Special thanks to the New School for use of their recording. To find out more about Making Contact, go to radioproject.org. You can also like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @making_contact. The Making Contact team includes Quan Booth, Laura Flynn, Jasmine Lopez, Lisa Rudman, and Andrew Stelzer. I'm George Lavender. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of In the Blast Zone, a panel on tar sands by rail on Tuesday, January 21st from 7 to 9 p.m. at Patagonia in Portland. In 2018, the Zenith Energy Oil Terminal opened, the first tar sands by rail export terminal on the West Coast. The Center for a Sustainable Economy hosts this panel discussion with activists fighting tar sands by rail in the Pacific Northwest. Again, that's In the Blast Zone, a panel on tar sands by rail on Tuesday, January 21st from 7 to 9 p.m. at Patagonia, 1106 West Burnside in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm. On the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Portland Chinatown's 5th Annual Lunar New Year Dragon Dance Parade on Saturday, January 25th from 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. The New Year Dragon Dance Parade to celebrate the Year of the Rat begins at Northwest 3rd and Davis at 11:30 a.m. and ends at the Oregon Historical Society. Live afternoon performances and activities will begin at 1:30 p.m. Again, that's Portland Chinatown's 5th Annual Lunar New Year Dragon Dance Parade on Saturday, January 25th from 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. The parade begins at Northwest 3rd and Davis at 11:30 a.m. and the activities and performances begin at 1:30 p.m. at the Oregon Historical Society, 1200 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. Information about the parade route, performers, and sponsors can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland.
I don't care how dimly your light is lit. You need to understand beyond any shadow of doubt that your light does emit, and in the darkest places, it really makes a difference.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. I'm gonna keep on walking, keep on talking, marching up to freedom.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to KBOO's special MLK programming. My name is Tammy Hoptius, and I'm the Public Affairs Director here at the station. This morning, you'll be hearing from various organizations and individuals about what they're doing to keep MLK's dream alive. At around 11 a.m., we'll be broadcasting the 35th Annual MLK Tribute Celebration from the Highland Church at 7600 Northeast Gleason Street. Then tune back in at about 6 p.m. to hear from KBOO's Labor Radio and Prison Pipeline. Coming up next is an interview with Edie Mondanay, the president of the local NAACP branch here in Portland, Oregon. Edie and I spoke about MLK's legacy and what the NAACP is doing to keep the dream alive. For those of you who might not know, the Portland branch of the NAACP was founded in 1914 and worked in the state of Oregon to establish equity for all people and to eliminate racial discrimination here in Portland. The mission of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, or the NAACP, is to secure the political, educational, social, and economic equality of rights in order to eliminate race-based discrimination and ensure the health and well-being of all persons.
This is Edie Mondenay, and I am the president of the local branch 1120 NAACP, and I'm also the regional vice president for the NAACP as well.
And how long have you been in that position?
I have been in the position of president now for the local for 2 years, and I have been in the position of vice president for the regional for just a few months. So it's been an exciting ride for me, and I'm very, very fortunate to be in these positions.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
How did you even get to the organization?
Well, a community member came and asked that I would come and sit in on a meeting, and they kind of solicited my help in a few areas. I started with the organization as a religious services coordinator, and the work just began from there. I was very fortunate to serve under Joanne Hardesty, who was the president at the time. She's now a councilwoman, an incredible woman and with incredible strengths. And I tell you what, just working with her was such a pleasure, so eye-opening, and her undying energy that she places into our community for the sake of being an advocate just really inspired me, and I just moved on with the work from there. Just moved by her energy and passion for the work, it just made it really an easy fit for me to just go forward.
Once I heard her mention that, you know, they would have the NAACP meetings and, you know, people would come armed trying to really give the people their scare. Have you ever seen anything like that?
Well, being in the NAACP, being that we're the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, there is an element that comes with the realization or the real fact that black and brown people are at the bottom. Mm. When you see that and you see an empowering organization trying to change that narrative or trying to push the needles in those places where there is disparities, you're going to find a movement that tries to push against that. Nobody wants power to stand up. And we know that there are powerful people in the black and brown communities. And when we stand up, there's an adage that says, when you stir from the bottom, everybody rises. So when we are in the market for limiting the powers of people, you're going to see opposition when they finally do rise.
Mm. And what kind of projects does the NAACP, especially in Portland, provide, or services does the organization provide for black folks and people of color?
The NAACP is a part of a greater organization locally. We are the watchman on the wall for our city in terms of civil and civic disengagement when it comes to black and brown people. Where there are disparities, that's where we show up. We're noisemakers, we're clarion criers. We ask the difficult questions as to why there is not a presence of blackness or brownness in rooms or in legislation or in education or in rejudification in our Department of Justice systems and et cetera. We are the people that show up and ask the difficult questions as to what and why and how and when. And that's what we do. In many ways, we are a knee-jerk organization to this degree that where there is a fire, we show up and we come with water hoses. In other ways, we serve our community through our committees, through education, through health and wellness, political action. We were very, very present and accounted for during the Portland Clean Energy Fund, which is one of our greatest accomplishments, and the communities of color coalitions that came together to push that initiative. That is basically what we do. We show up when there's disparities in where black and brown people are concerned.
What kind of support do you find that Black groups need? Because I'm sure there are different set of support that they need than organizations or even grassroots organizations that are predominantly white.
We support all organizations that engage the issues that surround African-American life.
Mm-hmm.
We are not a service organization, as it were. We don't offer housing. We don't offer legal advice. We don't offer any of those kinds of services. But what we do is we support and make sure that there's room at the table for other organizations that do those types of work.
Mm.
We are most definitely a support to all that are in need of this kind of support, whether it be fiduciary or whether it be just showing up, whether it be out on the ground, walking and picketing and singing and chanting, pushing a way into betterment and making our voices heard in community. One of the things that we do well and have done throughout history is to move legislation by nonviolent demonstrations, showing up with nonviolent attitudes and the insistence of our presence being recognized.
And so I guess that brings me to the next point, which sounds a lot like MLK's messaging, which is the nonviolent and the assertiveness of going through the legislation in order to create real change that's going to stick. So could you talk a little bit about the relation between MLK and the NAACP?
Oh, indubitably. You know, as the chief clarion crier of this movement, unlike the founding work of W.E.B. Du Bois, Martin Luther King talked about the unsettling force in 1967 prior to his assassination that was coming upon the shores of America. He made the prophetic statement that it was no longer going to be just about civic and civil rights. It was going to be about human rights. And I think that that kind of displays the attitude or kind of enunciates the attitude of the NAACP. It's just not about the civil and civic rights. It's about the human rights that need to be afforded or should be afforded to all peoples, especially those that are oppressed and the underserved. We most assuredly are on the scene to make sure that there is a place at the table for Black people, but more importantly, that there's a place at the table for all people who are underserved and oppressed.
You know, we hear in the news all of these things that are happening and ways that people are being disenfranchised, you know, in ways that we can't even believe it's 2020, how, you know, things are happening. And so in your personal opinion, what do you think MLK would say to his people, to all people today, as far as how to navigate this terrain that we're in?
First of all, I know that he would call us to order. He would call us to pay attention. He would call us to stand up, and he would call us to unify. His word to us would be today, I believe, to move forth with might and fervor and to not allow anything to turn us around. It's a continual fight in our country for the equality and equity and sustainability that really limits the power of economic reprise to our people and et cetera, et cetera. We are always underserved. And I tell you, another thing is the access for African Americans in traditional workplaces and loans and business, et cetera, is always, there's always a deficit there. So I think that he would call us to a place of coming together and just kind of making those things happen and demanding that those things happen and that there's a place for us.
When you say demand, what do you mean by that? In a forceful way or in a you know, non-apologetic way? What exactly do you mean by that?
Non-apologetic and forceful. You know, non-violent action, even though it's non-violent, doesn't mean that it's not forceful.
Mm.
There is a presence, you know, it's kind of difficult to ignore, say, for example, in Portland, it's kind of difficult to ignore the voices of 1,000 people gathering in front of the courthouse or city hall or in any civic or civil place with demands. It's kind of hard not to look and see that there's a disparity. So nonviolent organizations and nonviolent approaches to issues are most definitely strong and they're forceful. They're not passive, and they're very present, but without harm and without foul.
And for those people who would say to you, well, how can I be nonviolent when, you know, young black men are being shot by police officers and young black women also? When you see all those kind of news happening, how do you expect someone to not be violent?
The power of restraint, and to understand that we are outnumbered. To know that we need the help of our allies, and to call up on those that have not been marginalized. That is where the strength is. As you know, the organization, the NAACP, was founded on the strength of others who recognized the disparities and said, enough is enough. There was a group of Jewish women who got together and knitted their privilege and their finances with the thought process of W.W. Du Bois and said, we want to help make a difference. So in these instances, we need to call upon those that have the power. We need to call upon those that have the fiduciary kinds of means and call upon those that have that privilege to say, help us in this fight and stand with us. Not because we're weak, but because we're outnumbered.
And do you think that the, I guess, not new anymore, but the more recent organizations like Black Lives Matter are embodying MLK's messaging, or do you think that it might have been misinterpreted throughout the years?
Well, I'm sure that there is a margin of error in everything that we do and everything that is done. And I think from looking at lenses other than the movement's lenses for equality and equity and inclusiveness, yes, I think that they've embodied the message of Dr. King. We do matter, and we are present, and we should be counted, and our voices make a difference. So, yes, I think that movements like Black Lives Matter have their place, and they're most definitely necessary. We will always see the enemy, as it were, or those that like to oppress, divide, and conquer come in and misconstrue those messages and interfere with those messages and to try to create narratives that are just not so. But every group that has been enabled to champion the causes of black and brown people everywhere are most definitely necessary, and in my opinion, they need to become stronger.
And how can people, listeners, you know, people in Portland or even around the world, the country, how can they help organizations like the NAACP, or how can they educate themselves in allyship, like you said?
Be involved. Get involved. Our office locally is situated in the Lloyd Center Mall. And you're welcome to always stop by. Our meetings are the first Saturday of every month. I would encourage people to come and get involved, show up with their pen and paper in hand to try to help move the envelope in discrimination everywhere. It exists in our city and in our state. We have to remind folks all the time that this was the only state in the union that was inseminated in racism. And we need to understand that that spirit never died, and of course, it's still alive and very present with us. The city is the whitest city in America, penned by many authors and journalists across the United States, has a responsibility to show the world how to be inclusive. We have a very unique opportunity here in Portland to be world leaders in terms of racial equality and change.
So considering, like you just mentioned, the small amount of black people that are in Portland, would you say that the NAACP is like a revolutionary place?
Revolutionary? Okay.
Because I know it wasn't its inception, obviously, because of the you know, the situation. But having neo-Nazis walking down the street, you know, going to meetings, NAACP meetings, and having armed people there, that means that the work that you're doing there, it must be, it's revolutionary if it's, you know, ruffling so many feathers, you know, again, in such a modern time. So that's just my opinion. But what about you, you know, being the president and all?
Well, we have to be revolutionary. We have to have the mindset, again, of moving in circles where we're not welcome and invading spaces where we've been barred from and creating an ambience and a presence where we're not wanted. We have to be able to stand in the face of danger. When the Proud Boys came to the city and they invaded downtown, the NAACP was there. Mm. We didn't stay away from downtown. We went to where the fire was, and we said, listen, we're here, and we're not going to go away. We're not going to let anybody turn us around, and we're not going to stop our fight for inclusion and equality.
Was there a lot of allyship during those protests during that time when the Proud Boys were in town?
We had a great allyship with Rabbi Deborah Kolotny. I don't remember the name of her organization right now, but Rabbi Kolotny is a Jewish rabbi who stands up to the silliness of racism and works very hard at creating change. She was a great ally, as she did Shabbat on that day downtown with the Proud Boys, and we just aligned with her. And it was such a wonderful experience of the LGBT community came out in force, and they were present and accounted for, and they danced and were colorful and sang and stood up. And boy, I tell you what a great sense it was to be there with those groups that said, enough is enough, and we're not going to sit down.
That's so beautiful, just picturing it. And that's really the MLK's vision of beloved community, wouldn't you say?
Oh, most definitely. That was the beloved community. When we see Black people and brown people and when we see people who have been discounted and discredited and stamped out, when we see that allyship and we get together and we stand in one voice with regard to anything else but to be present and to be alive and to be welcome, it's one of the most beautiful things in the world, and that is the beloved community.
How can people on their own volition try to build their own beloved communities? Is it just a matter of educating yourself, or do you think that there is an actual, like, MLK guideline that's step by step on how to become a better community?
Yeah, there is an MLK guideline step by step. And you don't have to get it from a book. You just have to get it from within your heart and in your spirit. You have to stand up to racism wherever it exists. And usually it exists in the circles that no one else sees but you, in your families, at your dinner tables, in your locker rooms, at your job site, wherever you habitate. That's where we see racism when we walk into places of privilege. Those that are privileged and walk in those free spaces to combat that, we have to just begin to speak up. It starts with just having the conversation and not being afraid to say, I'm not having that. You know, as a matter of fact, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. Well, not a friend, an associate, who was saying some derogatory words about this, that, the other. These people, these crackers, and these I'm going to do this and that. And I said, wait a minute. We have to realize that the language that we're speaking is the language that we don't want to hear. We don't want people using the N-word. We don't want people speaking derogatorily about us. So therefore, we cannot speak that way about other groups of people as well. So we have to have a universal call of peace and acceptance for who everyone is, and give them their space and their time and the sunshine, and escort them into that with pride, dignity, and joy.
And for you personally and your life, how has MLK's legacy influenced you? I know that you are a vocal member in the Black community, also a pastor, that's right? Is that correct?
I'm a pastor, yes, in North Portland.
Yeah, a lot of 30 years. A lot of similarities between the two, I gotta say. How does MLK's legacy influence you?
His tenacity and his undying love for people and community, the dream that he had for inclusion and a place for everyone to walk in the sunshine. It's a simple vision. It's not a simple way to get there. It's a beautiful ask in a very torrid and ugly society. For six decades, we have watched racism fly under the radar. But I think that our president gave us a gift when he became elected. You know, I was raised in St. Louis, and in places like St. Louis and in the South and in places like New York and et cetera, people who understand what a roach is knows that roaches can be a problem. Mm-hmm. You have to keep everything clean and spotless and environments where roaches dwell. Well, one way that you understand beyond any shadow of doubt that you have a problem is when you wake up in the middle of the night and you turn on the light and you see all these roaches scatter, okay? Mr. Trump woke up in the middle of the night and he turned on the light and we see that we have roaches. So he gave us a gift that we know how to use RAID and other products and institutions and ways to get rid of roaches. So I think that we got a gift in this country to know that racism is alive and well, and it's time for us to stand up and do something about it. I have great hope in the millennials and those that follow them, because they are tired and they don't understand what we thought. We were equal. We thought we were free. So now they're getting an education and they're beginning to see for themselves what we've had to deal with over these many, many years, and that it hasn't gone away. And I don't think that they're going to put up with it. We have a very progressive legacy that's following us, baby boomers, and it's up to us to educate them, to support them, to take them by their hands and to bring them up. And I think that they have the right kind of a mind to want to annihilate this nonsense in its season.
Yeah, I agree with you. Does the NAACP have any upcoming projects or something that is kind of like showcasing or showing the youth how to progress on and kind of passing the torch, to say?
Yeah, in the entire month of February, every week the NAACP will be highlighting different causes. We're going to be doing workshops around empowering blackness. We're going to talk about blackface and caricatures that were intended to demean black people and what that looks like in our modern day society. We're also going to be dealing with white parenthood that raised black children in our country. There are lots of white partners that have come in and become foster parents and adoptive parents to African American children, and we're going to talk about what that looks like for them and how they can be on point in how they're delivering and raising their children, et cetera. And just what the black experience is in Portland and how we can deliberately speak against and talk about and stand up against racism in our public places, in our schools, in our churches, and in the public square.
And the one question, the religion aspect of your life personally, do you find that people are like more open to talking to you because you are a pastor, because you are a man of the cloth, or do you feel like sometimes there's a disconnect there?
Sometimes I think that that's not such a good idea, especially in the climate that we're in now. You know, evangelicals have really done a great job of presenting the kind of picture around Christianity and racism that is not so popular.
Interesting.
I think that's why I'm very comfortable with just being called ED rather than Pastor Mondenay or Reverend Mondenay, because I'm just an individual with a charge. You know, there's somebody that penned a quote that said, "I'm just a nobody trying to tell everybody about somebody that can save anybody." Mm-hmm. And that goes across the board. We're all nobodies, and we have the power to tell somebody, to tell everybody about somebody within ourselves that have the power to stand up. Mm-hmm. So each and every one of us have a part to play in making our society a better place to live in, whether we go to the Lutheran church down the street or the Pentecostal church out in the wherever it might be, we all have a responsibility within ourselves to grab a hold of that concept of inclusion and bring it to the surface.
When's the first time you became politically active or politically minded?
When I joined the NAACP, I lived in my side of the city with doing what we do. You know, we have a feeding program where we feed, and we have a program where we present community self-help groups to the neighborhoods so that they know where to go and get the kind of services that they need, et cetera. You know, we did that pretty well. We got situated in that, and we did our own thing, and I thought that was enough. But when I went to the NAACP, I understood that we had a much greater responsibility. And it's a much different place. And at times, it's a real scary place, but it's a real necessary place. So I'm extremely new to politics. And I'm glad that I did this at the age that I am. I'm over 60. So my hope is to engage younger people to start much earlier than I did, and to continue to carry the torch and the message so that I can retire and watch the good stuff happen through those people that are coming behind me.
And since you do end up working with youth a lot, I was wondering, does MLK and MLK's vision influence, you know, legacy? Do they understand it? Are they aware of it? Or is it something that's not talked about?
Well, MLK's message was timeless.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as we hear it, and as we're reintroduced to it, and as they hear it and they're introduced to it, it's almost like fire. Whatever it touches, it burns or it catches. It's a message that will not die, and it just gets greater as you hear it, understand it, and move with it. I think that they're hearing it. I think that they're understanding it. They've never heard it before like they're hearing it now. And as they're hearing it, they're answering the call. We have kids that are walking out of school to deal with climate control and climate justice. And it's teaching them even more about the disparities that have happened to groups of peoples that lived and were affected by climate injustice in redlined communities, and et cetera. That's just the tip of the iceberg. They're learning about the hate that is senseless through some of the egregious acts that have shown up in their schools, like nooses and blackface and chanting at basketball games and that kind of thing. This is not acceptable to the youth that I see and the youth that I speak to in this present day time. They're not having that. And those that are instituted in racism are finding that they're not really popular with their friends, and that there is a big push against it. So I'm encouraged by the actions of the young people and what they're waking up to and how they're responding to the call of inclusion.
MLK also had a lot of hope and faith in the youth. It's just it's just so beautiful. We can always like you said, they're not gonna take it.
Well, and that's where our power lies. And we've gotta invest in their education. We've gotta invest in their well-being, and we've got to invest in helping them shape their lives in positive and constructive ways. We live in the greatest country on the planet, and I say that unapologetically, and I know that other people may not agree, but we live in a place where I've been all over the world, and I've never seen or visited another place that is greater than America, and I have a full and very huge hope in what I see in our young people in our country and in our city.
Is there any kind of groups specifically that you'd like to give a shout out to, or high schools, middle schools, or something?
Well, you know, I'd like to give a shout out to all of the youth that are in all of our schools, from Cleveland to Lake Oswego to Beaverton. These kids heard the clarion call, and they got together, and they get together, and they make a difference. They'll walk out of schools, regardless of where they are, and they'll join together, and they'll stand together. We've seen that. Mm-hmm. And so I shout out to all of them. And I'm shouting out in particular to those teachers that support the movement and who are not afraid to stand up and to encourage their involvement.
You know, you get to see so many people, because a lot of times, you know, when people do community advocacy work, they're limited to just one area, you know, whether it's just Northeast or Northwest or something. But the NAACP is, you know, so many resources that they can provide tools to so many, you know, so many different types of people in different situations. And so lastly, before I let you go, for that person who's listening, who's probably, you know, maybe having a bad day, they look different, or they feel like they're not wanted, or they feel like they aren't being heard. They feel like, I thought that racism was over, but it's not. What would you say to them?
Don't lose faith. Keep up fight. There is hope. And we have to keep hope alive. We have to keep up the understanding that good always overcomes evil. We can never, ever adjust to thought or to the feeling that what we do that provides any light to that to the circumstances that oppress us is not necessary or invalidated. I don't care what kind of a light you are. I don't care how dimly your light is lit. You need to understand beyond any shadow of doubt that your light does emit, and in the darkest places, it really makes a difference.
You are tuned into KBOO Portland. This interview is part of our special programming for Martin Luther King Day. We are celebrating the life in talking with individuals and organizations about how they are keeping alive the dream. This interview is with Edie Mondenay, who is the president of the NAACP. And in this part of the interview, we are going to be talking about what the organization is doing for 2020. We're talking census, elections, and also you. Stay tuned. We had mentioned the NAACP, the work that the organization does, how you got to it. Of course, MLK's legacy that relates to the organization and just to our day-to-day lives in Black society. I know that was still going to be the last question, but when we spoke on the phone earlier this week, you'd mentioned something around language and how important language is. And I was just wondering if you could highlight that a little bit and talk about that.
Language is important. How we speak, what we speak, where we speak is extremely vital. Using the language of love, which includes inclusiveness and you're welcome. Using the language of acceptance, which says, I don't have to understand who you are and what you do, but you're welcome. Using the language of inclusion that says, you can come just as you are, and we will find a place for you in your positive light and when you bring your positive warmth and love. We have to be careful about the language that we use that says you're community and you're our brother. And not only that, you're our friend.
A lot of people, especially the youth, you know, there's this big uproar with storytelling and, you know, with the social media and just how reclaiming the narrative. And so I, as a Black woman, appreciate the NAACP and the work that you do with the community and with our society. And are there any final comments that you'd like to make before we wrap up?
Yeah. Move in your right to be present and to be heard. There is power in your voice. There's power in your hands. There's power in your feet. By all means, vote with good consciousness. Get your neighbors, your friends, and everyone else that doesn't think it matters. Pull them to the polling places, especially in this new election season. We're going to need the power of every young vote, every old vote, every vote, period.
Yeah.
All votes matter, just like Black lives matter.
And is the NAACP going to be doing anything for the election year?
Oh, yeah. Mm. Our whole campaign strategy this year is around census. This is the year of the census. Black people are historically undercounted and ignored around voting. So you'll hear a lot from the NAACP this year around the census and around voting rights.
Good. Good. And for the census, is it just an issue of Black people, African Americans, don't want to put themselves out there? Why does the census not work for our benefit, or hasn't yet?
In my view, we haven't done as much as we can to reach out to the hard-to-count community.
Mm-hmm.
And our community, again, being marginalized, oppressed, and underrepresented, is sometimes hard to reach. Moving ourselves in position to go into the trenches and into the weeds or into the grass roots to find those hard to count people is really where we need to put our energy. We are very, very much ignored because to get to that place of count and that we count takes work. And we're going to need everybody hands on deck to make sure that we matter and that we count.
And just quickly, can you explain to listeners what the census is and what, just very briefly, why it's important for people to be accounted?
Well, legislators make room for the people, especially those that are marginalized. Democracy is based on the majority of the people making sure that the minorities have voice and making sure that there's a place for them at the table. If you're not counted, present, and accounted for, that means that we won't make a place for you at the table. And government reparations and government portions and government monies in places where it really does matter about service, education, health, et cetera. If you're not there, then there's no reason to provide benefits for you.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be clear about the fact that we are here, we exist, and we need the same kind of help that every other community of people need.
So definitely tied into how, what kind of social benefits the state gets. It all, you know, ties back to the budget and where the monetary funds. Yeah, where the monetary funds.
Almost definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Hear, hear, yes, and amen. And it's extremely, extremely important to know that, hey, we're here. You forgot us.
Mm-hmm.
And we need a piece of that pie.
Yeah.
We need to really be included in this equity. It needs to be real equity. It needs to be true equity. We've got to remember that African Americans are the first affected and the last informed.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And is there any kind of ways that listeners can contact the NAACP if they want to help with this, with the census or with voter rights, or just help out in any capacity? Are there volunteer opportunities or anything like that?
Yeah, we can be reached at PDX NAACP. If you send us a note or stop in by the office, which is in the Lloyd Center, it's not open all of the time. Whenever other things have not called us away, mm-hmm. our offices are always open. And certainly we are there on the first Saturday of every month to receive you. And we certainly solicit your help.
Fantastic. Well, you heard it here. That's the first Saturday of every month. What time?
It's at noon.
Noon. Perfect. Perfect. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate all of that information. Your point of view is so valuable, and good luck with all of your work in the future. And you are definitely going to be hearing more from me, if that's okay with you.
Oh, my God. Yes, please come. We need you. And I'm really appreciative of the work that you're doing and the voice that you have. Thank you, my sister.
Thank you.
And you keep it up. Don't you let nobody turn you around.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
All right. God bless.
Bye-bye. I would like to give a big, big thank you to Edie for agreeing to be interviewed in contributing to both the broadcast and also the community, society, everything. Thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it. If you are interested in helping out the cause, go to pdxnaacp.org. Or, like I mentioned before, there is the meeting every first Saturday at the location. If you're interested in some of the events that are going to be happening, a part of the NAACP, please go to their website. One of the events that's coming up this month, the Lost Ark of African American History Experience in Vancouver and the Northwest. Again, that's going to be January 25th, 2020. Starting at noon until 4 p.m. They'll be exhibiting all sorts of African American artwork and artifacts, folktale dance and drumming, individual stories, and a panel discussion on local African American life and experience. Thank you very much for tuning in. This is special programming for Martin Luther King Day. It's been a pleasure to be here with you. You'll be hearing more from me, but that you'll be listening to a song from The Roots, which is a cover of a very well-known African-American liberation song. And after that, we'll be listening to some words from Martin Luther King himself, from the well-known speech that he gave in Stanford. So thank you very much for tuning in. My name is Tammy, and you're listening to KBOO. In 1967, Martin Luther King Jr. gave a speech titled The Other America. The speech was meant to sow support at an event called Salute to Freedom. This event was organized by Local 1199 in New York City, which is a union that was made up of mostly African Americans, Puerto Ricans, and other people of color. Here's a segment from that speech.
What I'm trying to get across is that our nation has constantly taken a positive step forward on the question of racial justice and racial equality. But over and over again, at the same time, it made certain backward steps. And this has been the persistence of the so-called white backlash. In 1863, the Negro was freed from the bondage of physical slavery. But at the same time, the nation refused to give him land to make that freedom meaningful. And at that same period, America was giving millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that America was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor that would make it possible to grow and develop. And refused to give that economic to its black peasant, so to speak. And this is why Frederick Douglass could say that emancipation for the Negro was freedom to hunger, freedom to the winds and rains of heaven, freedom without roofs to cover their heads. He went on to say that it was freedom without bread to eat, freedom without land to cultivate. It was freedom and famine at the same time. But it does not stop there. In 1875, the nation passed a civil rights bill and refused to enforce it. In 1964, the nation passed a weaker civil rights bill And even to this day, that bill has not been totally enforced in all of its dimensions. The nation heralded a new day of concern for the poor, for the poverty-stricken, for the disadvantaged, and brought into being a poverty bill. But at the same time, it put such little money into the program that it was hardly and still remains hardly a good skirmish against poverty. White politicians in suburbs talk eloquently against open housing, and in the same breath contend that they are not racist. And all of this and all of these things tell us that America has been backlashing on the whole question of basic constitutional and God-given rights for Negroes and other disadvantaged groups for more than 300 years. So these conditions, persistence of widespread poverty, of slums, and of tragic conditions in schools and other areas of life, all of these things have brought about a great deal of despair and a great deal of desperation, a great deal of disappointment and even bitterness in the Negro communities. And today, all of our cities confront huge problems. All of our cities are potentially powder kegs as a result of the continued existence of these conditions. Many in moments of anger, many in moments of deep bitterness, engage in riots. And let me say, as I've always said, and I will always continue to say, that riots are socially destructive and self-defeating. I'm still convinced that nonviolence is the most potent weapon available to oppress people in their struggle for freedom and justice. I feel that violence will only create more social problems than they will solve. That in a real sense, it is impractical for the Negro to even think of mounting a violent revolution in the United States. So I will continue to condemn riots and continue to say to my brothers and sisters that this is not the way. Continue to affirm that there is another way. But at the same time, it is as necessary for me to be as vigorous in condemning the conditions which cause persons to feel that they must engage in riotous activities as it is for me to condemn riots. I think America must see that riots do not develop out of thin air. Certain conditions continue to exist in our society, which must be condemned as vigorously as we condemn riots. But in the final analysis, a riot is the language of the unheard. And what is it that America has failed to hear? It has failed to hear that the plight of the Negro poor has worsened over the last few years. It has failed to hear that the promises of freedom and justice have not been met. And it has failed to hear that large segments of white society are more concerned about tranquility and the status quo than about justice, equality, and humanity. And so in a real sense, our nation's summers of riots are caused by our nation's winters of delay. And as long as America postpones justice, we stand in the position of having these recurrences of violence and riots over and over again. Social justice and progress are the absolute guarantors of riot prevention. Thank you.
of you a million times a day, and who's blue and lonely, honey, when you're away, say, who needs you every minute, who fell for you from the start, oh, who just longs for your caresses. You don't have to take three guesses who loves you, sweetheart.
That was a little bit of Billie Holiday for your listening pleasure this morning. That's a song entitled Who Loves You from 1936. And good morning, KBOO listeners. You are tuned to KBOO Portland, and the time now is just a few minutes before 10 o'clock. In celebration of Martin Luther King Day, we will be broadcasting special programming all day. Coming up at 10, Michael Leverett will talk about the importance of Black radio, and we'll hear Dr. King's address about Black people in radio at the National Association of TV and Radio Announcers. And then at 11, we have KBOO's 35th annual live broadcast from the Highland Church, where we join the celebration and tribute to Martin Luther King's life. Happy MLK Day to all KBOO listeners. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by members' support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate. And now stay tuned for Michael Leverett on Black Radio.
Join us on Tuesday, January 21st for Hindsight 2020, debriefing the last 3 years. A day of special programming looking back at the Trump regime, what happened, why, and the repercussions domestically and internationally. We'll focus on national policy, foreign policy, privacy and surveillance, policing, immigration, labor rights, confronting white nationalism, the environment, and much more. Again, that's Hindsight 2020, debriefing the last 3 years on Tuesday, January 21st from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. here on your community radio, KBOO Portland.
I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
Hi, I'm Shahid Hamid, KBOO board member. Join the World Arts Foundation and KBOO Radio as we pay homage to the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It's the 35th anniversary of Keep Alive the Dream, Monday, January the 20th from 11 to 6:30 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center. This year, we will be joined by international opera star Angela Brown and straight from America's Got Talent, Danelle Damon, That's Monday, January 20th, from 11 to 6:30 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center at 7600 Northeast Gleason. Or listen live on KBOO Radio or view it on Open Signal Community Television.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 3308 Northeast Peerless Place in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or at wilkinscpas.com.
Hello everyone, thank you for tuning into KBOO Community Radio. As part of our special MLK broadcast and programming, coming up next is going to be my interview with Michael Loverett, who is also KBOO's new syndicator. So you get a twofer. You get to hear about a new person that is working at KBOO, as well as the way that MLK's life and legacy has influenced them. After the interview, we will be hearing about a half-hour audio tape